word constituents assembly for the first time from an architect of the Department of Legal Justice and Department of Justice that we know it today, although he ended up being a Minister for Social Development. We owe a great deal to that legal giant. Shall we rise and observe? Honorable members, members of the media, let's welcome the public protector, Honorable Advocate Mkhwebane, and thank you for responding to our request for a meeting at short notice. As you know, we are here to receive a briefing on the budget processes, but they are, as I indicated in my letter, there are issues that are in the public space, and we cannot avoid any of the issues. So we'll be pleased that apart from the main business of this sitting, you take us on board on other issues so that we don't create uncertainty in the public, because as we have repeatedly said, your office is a very important office. It's an office that belongs to the people of South Africa. We all rely on that office for our protection. So we don't want to have a situation where any one of us has doubt about what is happening there. We don't want to have any member of the public casting aspersions on that. And we also don't want anybody to be speaking on your behalf. We want you to speak on behalf. You represent a very important institution in the life of our democracy. So be free to take this committee along so that we can also speak authoritatively if there are anything that are happening to that institution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, and public protector officials. I will be taking the committee through the presentation, and some of the parts of the presentation I will allow the staff to take us through. The presentation, the overview is the introduction, constitutional mandate, additional legislative mandate, 2018-2019 performance targets, MTEF budget overview, and request for additional funding. Honorable members, this time last year, I took you through the strategic thrust that underpins the annual performance plan and of the public protector, which is Vision 2023. And Vision 2023 has 8 pillars, which seeks to help the services of the public protector, or take the services of the public protector to the doorsteps of the far-flung communities who we refer to as the grassroots. The ultimate aim is to see to it that we have an empowered people who are their own liberators and public protector by the time I bow out of the office. Accordingly, we have refined our strategies in pursuit of this goal. Among other things, we have deliberately refocused our outreach efforts on rural areas and farming communities so as to enhance access. We will further be using vernacular community radios to spread the message to the targeted communities about our role and the services we offer. Once the message has hit home, triggering an inflow of services and conduct failure complaints, we will strive to render prompt services to all while also promoting and maintaining good governance in state affairs. To achieve this, we have introduced performance targets such as attainment of 30 investigation reports for the year, the finalization of 10 systemic investigations that were previously identified, and 100% adherence to the turnaround times in the finalization of cases. This is a clear demonstration of the fact that this year we aim to be impact-driven. We believe that through this approach we will help the country to get a step closer towards the realization of national targets such as addressing poor service delivery and improving good governance as spelled out in the National Development Plan. That this amount of work is near impossible without adequate resources, that goes without saying. Again, we look to you, honorable members, to assist us in ensuring that this office is adequately funded in order to help us to be more impactful. In the meantime, we have had to devise means to do more with the little we have. For instance, we've had to revise our outreach targets and review several others to ensure that they are smart. We have also added targets such as the entering into memorandum of understanding with strategic stakeholders for purposes of utilizing their premises for free as a way of increasing our footprint. That is one of the pillars in Vision 2023. This doubles up as a cost-saving measure as we cannot afford office accommodation. We are thankful to stakeholders, including Parliament, government, and the public, for their unwavering support. We continue to count on that very support as we carry on with the mammoth task of taking the services of the public protector to the grassroots. The constitutional mandate of the public protector as contained or as provided for is derived from Section 182 of the Constitution, which is the public protector is empowered by, as regulated by the national legislation, to investigate any conduct in state affairs or public administration that is alleged or suspected to be improper or which may lead to prejudice. So to report on that conduct and to take appropriate remedial action. So the public protector has additional powers as provided for in the national legislation, and the public protector may not investigate court decisions. Public protector must be accessible. This is also an obligatory provision from the Constitution to all persons and communities, and any report issued by the public protector must be open to the public unless exceptional circumstances provide otherwise. Additional key mandates include maladministration mandate, which is provided for in terms of the Public Protector Act, anti-corruption mandate, which is a shared enforcement of prevention and combating of corrupt activities act, a sole agency supporting enforcement of the Executive Members Ethics Code, and Save the Haven for whistleblowers. This is a shared under the Protected Disclosure Act, and the review of the decisions by the National Housing Regulatory Body, and resolving access to information disputes as provided for in BIA. So the presentation on our strategic plan goes to the review of our vision, which will has been revised to be very visionary and to provide for an empowered people and accountable public administration. our mission, which is has been revised as well, to in order to achieve the vision, we to protect all persons against administrative injustices, improve service delivery, and promote good governance in state affairs. This will make sure that this, we sustain the issue of good governance. The purpose remain the same. We are a catalyst for change in pursuit of good governance. And our principles, we've maintained the original principles and removed two, but then we've maintained accountability, integrity, and responsiveness as well, to be short and to be something which our officials and any other person will be able to remember. Our values, we've also revised them to include passion, ubuntu, leadership. This leadership is leadership without any title, encouraging our staff to be leaders in their own spaces, and the issue of being efficient as an institution. Our strategic outcome-orientated goals have been revised as well to be more smart and specific, to prompt services delivered to all persons and institutions in order to promote and maintain good governance. Accessible public protector services, this is from directly from the Constitution, an effective and efficient people-driven organization in order to achieve our core function, an oversight institution and public complaints mechanism strengthened. This is also directly from the Vision 2023, how we can make sure that institutions out there also have their complaints resolution measures. The prompt services delivered has the following strategic objectives: to investigate and finalize reports promptly, implementation of remedial action, and promote a culture of good governance. And then accessible public protector services, the strategic objective is to ease of access to public protector services. And then the other strategic outcome-orientated goal, which is effective and efficient people-driven organization. The strategic objectives are to develop and implement information communications technology to optimally support business objectives, acquire office accommodation and pool vehicles, implement an institutional effectiveness turnaround approach to improve efficiencies, and obtain a lean audit. Then the last one is the oversight of other institutions and public complaints mechanism strengthened. This goes to the issue of strengthening ombudsman institutions in South Africa and Africa. The targets per strategic goal one, the performance indicator is the number of reports we'll be issuing or finalized and issued. The target for 2018-19 is 30 formal reports, which will be issued by 31 March. And then we will finalize the 10 systemic investigations identified in the previous financial years. We will finalize 100% of cases within the following turnaround times. Early resolution matters is 6 months. This will be case, any case we receive from the 1st of April, we'll make sure that in 6 months is finalized. Service delivery related complaints, 12 months. And then the good governance and integrity, those relating to corruption and service failure or conduct failure, will be finalized in 24 months. These ones will be cases which we've received since the 1st of April 2017, and then finalize 100% of cases which are 2 years and older by March 2019, because we still have that backlog. Hold 10 dialogues with organs of state on systemic challenges, because if we identify that we still receive a lot of complaints against a particular department or against a particular municipality, then we'll have a dialogue to determine the root causes of that problem and how we can intervene in that particular aspect. 100% follow-up on remedial action matters, especially on reports which we've issued. The next one, the ease of access to public services, public protector services, which is strategic goal number two. We will conduct 208 outreach clinics across the country by 31 March. In this one, we've reduced, but then now we are focusing more on district municipalities and engaging local municipalities instead of only focusing on the number of outreach which we've conducted. So this will have more impact compared to what we've been doing. Enter into MOUs with the Department of Justice. That is at an advanced stage, but then we've made sure that we are having it as one of our targets to expand our footprint, and then 9 provincial speakers MOUs. On this one is how we can focus and strategically work with the various provinces speakers to utilize their public participation process to engage and make sure that we are accessible to the public. And then conduct 9 public protector roadshows by 31 March 2019. This one also is to make sure that we work on improving access to the office. Conduct 4 radio slots per province. As I've said, we'll be encouraging communication more on vernacular languages so that we can explain our mandate and as well promote access. And then conduct 5 national events by 31 March 2019. Develop and implement ICT to optimally support business objectives, 100% implementation of hard drive encryption, and the next one process of obtaining a clean audit, we'll develop and implement the approved clean audit strategy, sustain an unqualified audit whilst working on the process of reducing the number of audit findings by 50%. And then we will acquire office accommodation and pool vehicles. On this one, we were using the Pagisa contract, but then it's way too expensive for the organization. Therefore, we are in a process of making sure that we acquire our own pool vehicles, and we are still looking into a very efficient way of doing that. And then engage DPW on the available list of state-owned buildings to acquire, because renting state-owned buildings will be cheaper for us in the form of saving costs. Strengthening of the role of the ombudsman institutions, enter into 1 bilateral agreement with an ombudsman institution by 31 March. This every year we will enter into that, especially the existing ombudsman institutions which are sector specific. Public protector to chair 100% of scheduled IOC board meetings, the African Ombudsman Research Center executive board meetings. This one, the public protector is the chairperson of South Africa, is the chairperson of this board, which is responsible for training African ombudsmen. And then the public protector, by being the chairperson of IOC, the public protector serve on the IOMA EXCO meetings. So attend the 100% scheduled meetings. I'll hand over to the acting financial officer, Ms. Ndlandla Dick, to present the budget.
Thank you.
You say you will come back to the other issues of public interest later.
Yes, Chairperson, the issues of public interest, I thought the honourable members, when you will then be asking questions, so that I can clarify on them.
I didn't want it to appear as if that you are in court. I wanted you to be proactive, to take the committee on board as what is happening around the office, because we are not here to put you on trial, but it's up to you. But I would prefer that you clear things that are being raised around your office, because we don't want you to put you on trial. We want you to explain things that are in the public interest.
Okay, I think after the acting CFO is presented, I'll go into the parliamentary questions which we've received, and any other questions which I think that's the one possibly I have answers to.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. In presenting the 2018-19 budget, for PPSA, 2018-19 will be a particularly difficult year financially. Efforts to secure additional funds to support our normal operations, as well as the funding for special projects and to increase capacity, have not been successful to date. PPSA, however, we remain committed in carrying out our mandates, and we have in the meantime been forced to critically assess the way we do business so as to find ways and means to stretch our rent further. Even with all these efforts, it will not be possible for us to continue with normal operations in the way we've always done business. And when I take you through the budget, I'll just highlight certain items which are of particular concern for us, and we'll bring it to the attention of the members. For 2018-19, we received an allocation of 310 million rand, and which we have allocated to our core programs as follows. 58 million will go to objective number one, prompt service delivered to all persons and institutions in order to promote and maintain good governance. 139 million rand will go towards supporting our objective of being an accessible public protector service. The remainder will go towards just administrative functions and also oversight of institutions and public complaints and mechanisms to be strengthened. About 80% of our budget, which is about 250 million rand, literally funds our cost of employment, and the remaining 52 goes towards funding our goods and services. And as the members may be aware, and I'll also allude to that in my later presentation, a huge portion of our structure, as we've requested before, remains unfunded. So even with the 80% of our funds going towards cost of employment, that structure is not anywhere near the optimal structure which we would like to have as a PPSA. We've split our budget, as I've mentioned, towards administration, our core investigation, and stakeholder management, of which administration takes up 38%, which is the 118 million you will see projected in the slides. 58 million goes towards investigations, and the remaining 4% goes towards stakeholder management. And I think that is what is expected of us, to focus more on our core business and also spend some money towards the administration to support the core. So I don't believe we are doing much which is out of the ordinary there. We've tried to break down to the members, just to give you an idea in terms of our functions, where and what we are spending our monies on. So administration, we are talking to CEO's office and CEO support. We're talking to our finance, facilities, human resources, internal audit, legal services, which are normal administrative functions you would find in an institution of our nature to support our core business. In core, then, it would be our investigations, the Office of the Public Protector, Deputy Public Protector, and also our large provincial representation, which is carrying out our core work, but at a provincial level. And then lastly, the stakeholder management part of it, which represents about 4% of the funds that we've been allocated in 2018-19. In more detail, if I had to break down our 52 million rand, which is outside of the cost of employment, we are spending largely on lease payments, and that is lease payments for the rental for office buildings and for photocopiers. So one of the cost interventions we've implemented in the current year, as the PP has alluded earlier, was to get rid of the lease of the motor vehicles. However, we are still evaluating alternative means of how then we can service the transportation needs of the office across all our 19 offices in a more cost-efficient and effective manner. So we will procure transportation means in another way outside of the PAKISA contract. We're also spending significantly on computer services. That is to basically our ICT needs of the office. We're paying for web hosting and internet services. We're paying for Microsoft licenses. And I think those are also just normally expected business expenditures.
Push the mic towards you a little bit. And then
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And then the other major expenditure we're incurring has to do with what we've termed consultants. And in there, we are speaking to the costs we are incurring for the Auditor General, which is our external auditors, our internal auditors, which is Ngubane currently, as well as we factored in a small amount towards legal costs, which is nowhere near what we ideally need as an institution to support our litigation costs, which have seen a significant rise in the last few months due to that judgment where all our cases now are taken, most of them are taken on a judicial review because of the judgment where it was passed that our remedial action are now binding. So we're not going to be able to ideally service that in the new financial year because we've only allocated 4 million rand towards legal fees because our budget just has no room to accommodate that. And then under other, which is the other big expense item that we've noted on our presentation, in there you will find any other expenditure that we couldn't classify into the major classification items. So you would find municipal services. You will find parking that we pay for staff members for the office in terms of office space. You'll also find issues of where we have, for example, short-term car rentals and any other normal business expenses that we are incurring, which really we cannot classify them on the classifications above. So our planning process was quite an intensive one, building up to the budget that we are presenting today. We've really sat down as a management team, as the executive, to see where is it that we can cut, where is it that we can run our operations in a more efficient manner. However, we're still challenged in terms of just normal operational costs. So when you look at our budget for 2018-19, you will see that from everything we've projected, we would still have a shortfall of 29 million rand for operational spend in 2018-19 because, Chairperson, we've got obligations which are contractual, which we will not be able to just outright get out of, which are costing us 57 million rand. However, from just 310 million, less 250 million to cost of employees, we are realistically left with 52 million rand, which means even for our contractual obligations, we still fall short. And when we look at what we need to service our legal costs, what we need to service other business expenditures, for example, travel. We cannot travel as much as we would like to for investigations, for outreach programs. So for that, we would need that additional 29 million rand to support the PPSA in terms of just running operations in a normal way so that we can continue to strive towards meeting on our mandate. We've tried to really sum up some of our key challenges and some of the interventions that we have put in place or we are working on putting in place as an executive team so that we can try and really help the PPSA move forward. So some of the challenges, as I've mentioned, we do continue to have insufficient funding for 2018-19, and if I had to put a figure to it, it's 29 million rand, which we are falling short of to fund our normal operations. We're having issues of staff, low staff morale, you know, the issue of the job evaluations that we could not implement due to funding issues. We continue to have capacity shortages, the issue of the diverse skills. For example, we wanted subject matter experts. In the previous cases we presented, we still don't have money to attract those skills. Of course, then there's the issue of the increased litigation, the reviews. That cost has escalated significantly, especially in the year 2017-18, and I think the trend will continue in 2018-19 and beyond. We still experience challenges in terms of security. physical and otherwise. And also one thing that really throws us off the wagon is also the poor turnaround times from other state agencies that we normally require support from. Your DWP, for an example, we're still struggling to get our leases sorted, accommodation sorted. That is one other challenge we'd like to mention. In terms of interventions, what is it that we are doing currently to also assist the PPSA to move forward? We've made the value proposition. We've presented to this forum, to the National Treasury, making a case for the additional project and the funding related to that, so as to support our business in moving forward. We are currently going through our own organizational review to ensure that PPSA is performing optimally as an institution in carrying out its mandate in 2018 and beyond. We're still having a proactive approach in making sure that we continue to push the DWP in helping us secure our office accommodation in provinces as well as in the regional offices where we would like to have presence. We have, and I think the PP has touched on it, that we are working on those MOAs with other institutions so as to continue to leverage on synergies which might be present out there for us to take advantage of. And I think the last part of the presentation, you may have seen it before, we've literally put back our request for additional funding, because in as much as we have presented on it before, nothing really concrete has come back to the PPSA. We still don't have the funds to carry out the projects that we have listed on our project plan. So the issue of the 870 million rand, Chairperson, would like to present it back to you over the MTEF. That is the amount that the PPSA ideally requires so that we can move from where we currently are and to move into a PPSA that is optimally structured, that has the right security that it needs, with the funding of, with an organizational structure that is fully capacitated and funded. We're looking at issues of video conferencing that will assist us and also save in transportation costs. We're looking at the issues of security improvement. That is a huge challenge for the PPSA, the security issues, the rising litigation costs. We still require the additional funding for that. When you're looking at the integrated telephone system, we're operating on a very old system which is currently not supporting our operations. We would humbly request for funding for the PPSA to be able to carry that out. The issue of the subject matter experts, I cannot stress how important it is for us to be able to have funding to be able to attract and retain, whether it's on a permanent basis, on a contractual basis, on an ad hoc basis, experts in different fields who can assist our teams in carrying out successful investigations. And I think without going into the detail of each one of those projects, I would ideally like to stop my presentation there. And to just summarize that, yes, we did receive an allocation of 310 million rand. 80% will go to cost of employment, the remainder for goods and services. We have, as a team, worked on ways in which we can do business differently to try and stretch our rand. However, we still remain significantly challenged, and we require that additional 29 million rand to be able to fund our normal operations. And again, Chairperson, I'd like to present the case for the PPSA in terms of the additional funding request to say over the MTEF, we do require the funds of 870 million for those projects as mentioned, so as to move the PPSA from where it is currently to an ideal place where we are really serving the citizens of South Africa and their communities and really delivering on Vision 2023. I thank you, Chairperson.
Public Protector, thank you for having confidence in young people, giving them serious responsibility, and you can see she's young, confident, and knows what she's talking about. We hope you continue doing that. Not that you should pension some of us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Responses to questions raised by members of Parliament. There were questions which were raised by Honourable Brayton Bach, sent through Department of Justice, and I've raised it with the Speaker, and that we can respond to those questions directly to the Parliament or National Assembly, since we are responsible or reporting to Parliament. Question 660 was asking about what number of reports were released by the Office of the Public Protector, which were taken on review in the past 3 years, since April 2017. The past 3 years, we've got 4 reports which were taken on review for 2014-15, and 3 reports for 2015-16, and then 4 reports for 2016-17, and then for 7 reports for 2017-18. And then the other questions were relating to the details about each report taken on review are as follows, and the financial implications. There's reports of 2014. The name of the report was stringed along by National Empowerment Fund. The amount which was expended there is 719,000. And then the other one, it's called, in fact, it's an own own initiative investigation about the escape of animals at the Hluhluwe Imfolozi Park. To this far, we've spent 309,000. It's a 2014 report. The other 2014 report, Regulating Justice, this relates to the South African Bureau of Standards report. So far, we've spent 1.2 million. Its parties are still exchanging pleadings in this particular matter, no date for hearing as yet. And then the other one of 2014, it's called Saved by the Notice. So this relates to Senqu Municipality in the Eastern Cape. We have spent 1.3 million so far. The application has been dismissed with costs. On this particular one, we are in the process of recovering the costs from the municipality. There's another one of 2015 called Derailed, the famous Brasa matter. We so far, this was a review brought by Lucky Montana. So far, we've spent 739,000. Parties are still exchanging pleadings in this particular one. There is no hearing date which has been set. The 2016 one, cost of deviation, which relates to a Ten Hag in Port Elizabeth RDP houses. 1.2 has been spent. We still, part of the remedial action was reviewed and set aside, and they were found to be unlawful. The complainant has taken the judgment on appeal, so it's a 2016 matter. And then the other one for 2016 is called Postponed Delivery, the Eco Park, Office Park, and the Utilization of Labor Brokers by the South African Post Office. We've spent 798,000. Certain findings and remedial actions were reviewed and set aside on this one. And then the other one of 2016 is the State of Capture report. We've spent 1.9 million on this particular matter. This one, the process is still in the we're still in the process of engaging relating to the costs incurred for all application reviews. And then there's another one of Northwest Nduza Cleaning Services regarding the tender irregularities. The matter, in fact, we've spent 227,000 so far. The matter is set down for hearing on the 19th of April, 2018. Then there's another one, the Mapula Mugaba Phukwane, the Limpopo matter. That one, parties are still exchanging pleadings, no date set. We've spent 170,000 so far Then there's another one of tender irregularities in the Tshwane South College. We haven't spent so far. We're still exchanging documents. The Ngakamudiri Mulema one is 2017. We're still exchanging documents. I will avail this document, Chairperson. And then the other one is National Treasury Nexa matter. In fact, the National Treasury is in Nexa. We're still exchanging pleadings on this one. We haven't spent any amount. And then there is a CX matter, which we've spent, the costs were 8 million, and the remedial actions were the remedial actions were set aside. And then we've got the Baboba Mukhale. We've spent 163,000 so far. We're still exchanging pleadings. And then there is a Colonel Mviti matter against the South African National Defense Force. That one, we haven't spent any money. We're still exchanging pleadings as well. And then there is another one of the expenditure incurred in preparation of the late former President Nelson Mandela. One of the officials has taken the Pearl Protector on review. We're still conducting assessment. There's a Friede matter. The DA and CASAC has taken the matter on review. We haven't expended any costs so far. Then there was question 661, which was relating to the international trips. Did the Pearl Protector undertake in the 2016?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, may I interrupt? Since it's my questions that are being answered. These are parliamentary questions that are directed to the Minister of Justice.
Actually, I didn't want to interrupt because I don't hold a brief for any political party. I'm a chairperson of the committee. I'm interested in matters that affect the image of the institution that are in the public interest. So I'm not going to also use this forum to offer you an opportunity to deal with questions of the DA or any other person. Each of the political parties are here. They have the right to put their questions. But I'm not going to use this forum for you to be responding to the DA or the ANC or any party. So when I said matters in the public interest, really matters that affect the image of the institution, but maybe I did not clarify myself. So the approach that we are taking is not helpful. I agree that questions that are raised to the House must be dealt with in the House. Members need time, all of them, to put their questions to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I just finish? I just want to make it very clear that I don't accept for one moment, as you've just said, that that questions directed from members of Parliament can be answered in this fashion in this committee. And if there's a difficulty with answering them in the way that that legislation provides for, then that is a matter we'll have to take up elsewhere, but not here. Thank you.
I'm just interested in matters that, in your view, are in the public interest, which you think would affect the image of the institution. We deal with that, not the specific questions coming from any political party. I don't hold a brief for any political party here.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was clarifying the very same matter which was in the public interest, because there was that issue that I didn't respond, or the Minister of Justice indicated that I didn't respond to or give him the information, where I clarified to the Speaker that I'm responsible for reporting to the National Assembly or to Parliament, hence I'm addressing those. But then it's fine, I'll just not go into details unless there are questions. Hence I thought there will be specific questions which are in the public interest, which you can pose to me, and then I can answer what those matters are relating to. Thanks.
very much. I'm sorry we may not have clarified what we expected of you, and of course we left it in your good judgment to respond as you understood us. So we will not hold that against you. We will ask the honorable members to put their questions as they see fit. Let me take the names. But before I do that, Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Skosana, Honorable Horn, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Swart,
thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, public protectors, and colleagues. Chairperson, let me start by thanking. I've got a bout of flu. I may not be audible enough. My apologies. Let me start by thanking the public protector and the CFO for the presentation, and commend them for positive developments, especially the MOU entered into with SALGA to improve efficient service delivery, proper service delivery, and the rules, which I hope the Secretariat will give to the committee relating to investigations. And again, submission of those 17 boxes of files to the judicial inquiry into state of capture to the Deputy Chief Justice Zondo. However, Chairperson, there are very serious concerns which, as you have alluded to, might have an impact on the Office of Public Protector. Very serious challenges, Chairperson. The first one being an adverse court judgment and the personal cost order in the APSA case versus Public Protector South Africa and another, which was dismissed with cost. And Chairperson, which the Public Protector herself has said that she will petition the Supreme Court of Appeal. May the Public Protector kindly take us through on that, what is taking place now. And the second issue, Chairperson, is the integrity concern relating to the letter from APSA legal representatives accusing Advocate Busiso Mkhwebane in her capacity as public protector of lying to Parliament when making presentation on the 6th of March this year regarding the issue, amongst others, the issue of saying that she never met with the former president, whereas it is alleged that she met with the former president. In that meeting, the public protector said she met with officials of presidency. Also, can she take us through that? The third critical issue, Chairperson, the issue of institutional instability. Chairperson, recall that in 2016, the public the position of CEO was held by Mr. Themba Dlamini, No, the first one, it was the lady Zondo. Then she left within a very short space of time. It was Dlamini Themba, Mr. Dlamini Themba, also left within a very short space of time. Now, the signing off here, we are shown another name, Miss Ntorise Musisi. That is a cause for concern for me as a member of this committee, Chairperson. Same applies to the position of a Chief Financial Officer. As much as we appreciate that a young person is now in acting this position, but Chairperson, this in itself is causing a very serious instability to the institution. We had, in October 2017, we had Mr. Kaposa, who were informed during one of the presentations that he is no longer with Public Protector South Africa due to consequent management as a result of challenges while Mr. Kaposa was Chief Financial Officer. Then we had as acting CFO, which was appointed. Then again, as we are talking, Ms. Nontanta Dick signed off the documents before us here. And the position has been advertised, application closed on the 18th of March this year. So also take us through that. And the Chairperson, all in all these issues which I've raised are causing serious institutional instability in that office. So may the Public Protector then tell this committee really what is happening in that office. And again, Chairperson, there are also there was a slide regarding to funding the last one, the amount of 870 million was reflecting on that. You'll be aware. May you put it on, please? In the letter you wrote to the speaker requesting for additional funding, may you tell this committee there are other items, I think line items, which I think you may compromise. So which are those? Because it's not easy for taking into consideration financial constraints to give the Public Protector South Africa all that amount. So in that, I've seen where you made mention of skills, actuaries, and so forth. So which ones they you can live without? For now, thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And greetings to all honorable members, the Public Protector and her entourage, and everybody in the house. Yeah, no, I think we note the comprehensive report given by the Public Protector of the 2018 to 2023 strategic plan and 2018-2019 annual performance plan. I think it is a very comprehensive report that we really appreciate, I think, as members of this committee. And, well, with regard to the issue of the request for additional funding, I recall that it's not for the first time. I think we were sitting with this matter as a committee. And I think the report, I think, is raising quite genuine issues that I think need to be considered. Well, however, like my colleague has just indicated, I think the Office of the Public Protector, I think, is aware that as a country, I think we are facing financial challenges. I think almost all departments are affected. think the number of Chapter 9 institutions are also affected because of these financial challenges. I think we're all under pressure from the National Treasury. So I don't know as to what is your plan as an institution in assisting us, also assisting the National Treasury in maybe cutting your trouser or your skirt just to assist the situation. Well, I know other things might not be easy to do away with them, but obviously if we are in this kind of a financial crisis, I think also from your side, I think you must come to the party to say these are the needs that we have put forward. But looking at the challenges financially, which the National Treasury is heavy, I think we are maybe as an institution prepared to meet the National Treasury halfway. I think it's a matter, I think, that you should also look at, so that even ourselves, as we advance this matter, wherever we get an opportunity as a committee, but we are also able to indicate that the Office of the Public Protector is also prepared, I think, to move to meet the National Treasury halfway. So I think, especially looking at the issue maybe of revising or reviewing the institutional organizational structure, maybe in the medium term, to align with the current fiscal realities. I think those are some of the issues maybe that you can look at. Maybe you can tell us as to, I think, what is your view in looking at such things. Well, on other issues of public interest, I think, like my colleague has indicated, I think the institution, I think, must understand that, I think as the parliament, I think we've got the responsibility of always giving confidence to the public that our Chapter 9 institutions are working as per the constitutional mandate, and they are always ready and always able to execute their responsibility. So obviously, at all times when there are public issues, we find people raising issues, we would want ourselves as the committee, but also the public protector, to respond and clear the air so that there's no cloud. Because as we are dealing with these issues of financial challenges and what, we should do that in under a normal circumstances where there's no cloud hanging and stuff like that. So I think from time to time, I think you must not be surprised, from time to time when we get an opportunity to meet with yourself, we will always raise these things just to give you an opportunity to clarify them to the public. Because obviously the public, I think, is having a lot of interest in the institution of the public protector. But they are also having a keen interest in us as the committee of parliament responsible for justice and correctional service. So at any given opportunity, we would raise these issues just to give this institution an opportunity to clear the air. I think the issue of institutional stability, I think it's one matter that is being raised in the public. Well, especially in relation to the issue of CFOs. Well, we know that people, they might resign from institutions because of various reasons, maybe because of greener pastures or whatever. But if I think these resignations, I think they come now and then, I think it raises eyebrows. So I think we would want to know, especially in that particular important office, which is the office of the CFO, because there was a CFO, Ms. L. Zondo, I think, who resigned in November 2016, and she was replaced in March 2017 by Mr. Themba Dlamini, but who also subsequently resigned in November 2017, 8 months after joining the PPSA. So I think those are issues that I think the public is raising to say why it looks like there are challenges, why people come and go, especially at that serious senior management level and in the office that deals with the finances of the institution. So I think those are the issues that are being raised in the public. So I think if we can get a response on that, I think we would be happy. Secondly, I've noticed that I think most of the time when we meet with you, you've got a very strong team public protector that you bring in, but most of the time the deputy public protector is absent. Well, I know that maybe in our invitation we did not indicate that we need the deputy public protector, because obviously the deputy can only deputize you. But I think we've just noticed that most of the time the deputy public protector is not in. If you can be just abreast there, maybe handling other responsibilities of what you just want to. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think in addition to the issues raised already, I think there's certain add-on questions that must be asked also. My colleagues have referred to the issue of institutional instability, but I think the one question that must also be asked and answered here, which also I think to an extent intertwines with the issue of the financial sustainability of the office, is at what cost to the public purse does all of these resignations or exits from office by senior officials within the Office of the Public Protector come? We are aware of at least one settlement agreement with the former CFO, and it would be good to be apprised of, if not all the detail, then at least the monetary implication to taxpayers out there. And then in addition to that, the question begs whether these other senior officials to which my colleagues have alluded to were also paid some severance packages or some settlement money, and if so, what the total amount in respect of all of those were. And then, Chair, one also has to ask the question whether everybody, even if acting now, is being paid only in respect of for what they have been appointed. For example, the acting CFO, to the best of our information, was appointed on a level 12, but currently is now being remunerated on a level 14. And that needs to be explained as to why, given the financial constraints, but also given the specific prescripts of the legislative environment, how that can be justified. Then, Chair, my colleague to the far left has alluded to the rules of investigation that was tabled at Parliament. We have, as a committee, has not been afforded the opportunity to see all of them yet. But I have certain comments and questions in respect of the rules. First of all, APP and strategic plan of the public protector, on page 13 there of the strategic plan, the public protector makes mention of the manner in which the SCA in the Mail and Guardian case has assisted with setting certain benchmarks and clarifying the law in respect of investigation. And I want to inquire to what extent does the rules as tabled now embrace and implement the law as stated by the SCA? And why I want to ask that specific question, and you have also alluded to matters of public interest, is if we take the public protector back to a previous appearance at this committee in which she was asked specifically as to why in the so-called Vrede Dairy Project report, no mention was made of political sign-off on the project. Her answer was more or less to the effect that, but the complaint never mentioned political involvement. The complaint related to more or less the way the administration or officials in the Department of Agriculture in the Free State handled the matter. But then if we have a look at our own strategic plan, there Roman letter 3 on page 14, it specifically said the public protector is not restricted to investigating what has been placed before him or her and may investigate on his or her own initiative or on information that comes to his or her knowledge, however that may occur. So it would seem that that was ignored in the Vrede Dairy Project investigation, but I specifically today want to know to what extent is that then going to be embraced going forward in terms of the rules as tabled at Parliament. And then also in terms of the rules, Chair, there's this question that begs, and in terms of the relationship between the Office of the Public Protector and complainants, to what extent the rules place certain duties on the Public Protector to keep complainants informed as to the progress or the lack thereof of investigations. And this matter, I think, cuts through right from the ordinary Joe Soap complaining that his or her municipality is not treating him or her fairly in respect of a new property valuation, the ordinary man on the street, right up to the so-called high-profile investigations, where, for example, in the Vrede Dairy Project, the complainant has informed me that the first he heard that the report ultimately was released was when ANN7 phoned him at 5 o'clock on the morning after it was placed on the website during the night to ask for comments. And now of late in the Gigaba matter where the complainant was not informed that the public protector has asked for an extension of the 30-day period. And that seems to be odd at best and something that needs to be addressed in the rules as well. Then, Chair, if I may, also in respect of the Gigaba complaint, ask the public protector for some feedback or comment in respect of the way investigations in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act is prioritized by her office. The relevant background to the question is this. We all know that the public protector is the sole enforcement agency in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act. Then simultaneously the Act gives the office 30 days in which to complete complaints referred to it in terms of that Act, and I want to firstly say that I think the 30 days was agreed on by Parliament for very good reasons, in the sense that obviously apart from frivolous complaints, the moment there is at least initial indication of possible breaches of the Executive Members Ethics Act, it's something that has to be dealt with in a very serious and speedy manner. So the question now begs, why, for example, in the Gigaba matter, where leave to appeal was denied fairly early on in the 30-day period, there can still be no outcome. And we know that on record it is now that yes, but I've written to the relevant member, and I'm awaiting his or her response. But now, Chair, that takes us back to the question of the rules and whether it really enables the public protector to, in a prudent manner, deal with the duties of the office. Because I want to make the statement that in matters of possible breaches of the Executive Ethics Members Act, the rules must make provision, if we as Parliament ultimately have to sign off on it, that in instances like that, this must be firstly prioritized by the Public Protector's Office, but firstly also makes provision for it that members of the executive must prioritize their cooperation in this regard. And it would seem to me that if the rules do not enable this, then the question must be asked whether it is dealt with the necessary seriousness. Then, Chair, in respect of the other matter of public importance, the matter of APSA and the CIEX, I think we need to be apprised as to what, in the view of the Public Protector, is now the status quo. First of all, after her appearance on the 6th of March at this committee, when she informed us that she, to her mind, acted in an honest and bona fide manner at all times during the investigation, and that she intended appealing the ruling of the North Gauteng High Court, we then later learned that, as a matter of fact, she only was intended to attack this by way of an appeal on a very limited basis, namely to ask on appeal that the personal cost order be set aside and that the adverse finding that she did not fully understand her constitutional obligation and did not and exceeded the bounds of her indemnification be set aside. Now, I think, Chair, we all now also know that in the meantime that leave to appeal was not granted on the basis that the North Gauteng High Court felt that there was no reasonable prospect of success. And then I think it is out there that there's now a petition to the Supreme Court of Appeal being contemplated. But, Chair, the real question is this. And that the Public Protector must explain to us, is that given the fact that ultimately the remedial action, I think, was found to be, if not stated in as many words, absurd by the courts, we must be appraised as to how then, if we must still accept that the Public Protector is of the view that she acted in a bona fide and honest manner during the investigation, what must then follow? If she did not fully understand her constitutional obligations and mandate and function, isn't it then naturally, given the whole fallout and the manner in which the court has pronounced, also in respect of the issues she's not attacking on appeal, that it must follow that there must be questions asked about competence to understand then at least the law, if not constitutional obligations and mandate? Because even if bona fide, it's clear that there was made a very serious error in law in the initial report and remedial actions, which the Public Protector is not attacking. As a matter of fact, she ultimately acceded to that judgment. And then we must be made to understand how, even if bona fide, we must accept that going forward, the competence is there if the law was so seriously misunderstood in this very instance. Then lastly, Chair, in respect of the funding situation, and my colleagues to the left has already alluded to, I think, certain issues that must be answered, namely whether there shouldn't be a re-look at the organogram of this institution. And I think in that sense we go back to the approved staff component going back as far as 2012 by Parliament, which has never been fully funded. And I must just add my voice to them in this respect in saying that ultimately I don't think, with the greatest of respect, it's helpful to keep on saying that we need hundreds of millions, if not billions, over the medium-term project, given the specific fiscal space this country is operating in. And my plea to the Public Protector's Office is this. They must go back and do an honest appraisal as to what is vitally necessary to perform its functions, and then engage Parliament and Treasury again, because it would seem to me at this stage that in coming here to say but we ultimately need billions of rands to perform our functions, there's just no way, with the greatest of respect, I think Treasury is ever going to take them really seriously. But then, Chair, we also get to the point where I must say, and we've been appraised in the past, that much of, in terms of strategic objectives and target setting, is now being determined also by the Auditor General and in terms of their GRAF standards. The difficulty I'm sitting with also in assessing the financial needs of this office is that we are, to a large extent, in the dark now as to what the real situation at the Office of the Public Protector is. Previously, when we dealt with these matters, we were, for example, also concurrently being informed of the number of complaints that find themselves on the so-called backlog role of the Public Protector. Previously, we were at least appraised to say that, okay, we have, for example, 8,000 cases still not finalized, of which 1,500 is older than 2 years. But now none of that information is forthcoming, and in terms of strategic objects, it is very vague in the sense that there is an object or a target to deal with everything older than 2 years. But then, Chair, there is no appraisal as to the complexity of matters and whether the Office of the Public Protector is impacted to deal effectively with matters that really sometimes only need the writing of a letter to address them, and whether they at this stage at the point where they don't even have that capacity, and whether the so-called backlog or older than 2 year cases are complex matters in which some headway at least have been made. So with the greatest of respect, I think for us as this committee and as Parliament to assess the impact of the financial constraints effectively, we need more real information as to what is going on the at grassroots at the office. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to talk a little more with the Public Protector about their budget and the fact that it's apparently depleted from the answers to questions, and also from her presentation, it appears that the budget is depleted and is in the red. I'd like to know as to how much it's in the red by, so a figure in rands. And it appears that this is largely as a result of the volume of litigation. So currently it looks like between 15 and 20 matters are on review. Some of these emanate from the time of the previous Public Protector, but it's very clear that most of them emanate from the current Public Protector's tenure. So why is there such a huge volume of litigation and review? And how much, just a ballpark figure in rands, is spent on this? It's also apparent from the documents presented to us today that security expenditure has increased quite significantly at the Office of the Public Protector. What are the reasons for this, and how does this impact on your already constrained budget? I've been unable to ascertain from these documents, and it's something that concerns me, whether the Office of the Public Protector signs performance agreements with staff. So are there performance agreements in place? Are they currently up to date? And are they implemented? It's also clear from the presentation that there are limited or no funds available for S&T. How does this affect investigations in smaller towns and in rural areas? And how does this impact on your ability to meet your mandate? The electronic case management system, we keep seeing reports of it in documents presented to this committee, but it has not been functional since around 2014, and lack of funds are always cited as the problem. This committee was previously informed that the Microsoft platform license had been purchased. Has it been installed, and if not, why not? Is there some other electronic case management system, so not the Microsoft system, currently being installed? Who is developing it and installing it? What is the arrangement regarding the financing of this case management system? How is it being paid for, and to whom is the financing being paid? And how does this affect your ability to remunerate your staff, which is already constrained? Do you currently have a security manager in your office? If so, has he been suspended? And if he has been, I'd like to know why. You also currently have, as far as I'm aware, an acting chief financial officer. Is this still the case? And if so, from which institution has he been seconded? The chief executive officer post was advertised and interviews were arranged. I'm sure that amongst others, the current acting chief executive officer was shortlisted. How many people were interviewed for this post? Has an appointment, a permanent appointment been made, and if not, why not? Did the public protector attend the AORB conference in Malawi? If so, how was the trip funded? Did the executive secretary of the public protector and her protector accompany her on the trip? And if so, why was this necessary? And for whose account did they accompany her? Is it correct that training is offered by the AORC at these conferences? And if so, did the public protector attend the training for the full duration? The public protector has told us that she chairs the board of this meeting. Did she do so in Malawi? Did she stay for the entire duration and chair the board meeting? And if not, why not? And then, Chair, just with regard to the documents that we received regarding appointments of special advisors, we've had very little time to interact with these documents. Why does the public protector want to appoint a special advisor, and how will such a person aid her in performing her functions? The Act requires the public protector to consult with the Minister of Finance and the Public Service Commission. Has this been done? Amid budget constraints, how will these persons be paid? What are the reporting lines of such persons? In terms of the policy presented, there appears to be no link between the special advisor and the accounting officer. Why is that? Have such persons been appointed in the Office of the Public Protector? And why are they necessary if there's a Deputy Public Protector and an EXCO and senior management? What role do these people play? Why are special advisors necessary at all? And then just finally, even assuming that all of these questions are answered, I just want to make it very clear that the DA has severe reservations about this policy and will in all probability oppose it.
No, thank you, Chair. I have to give my apologies. I need to leave at 11:45 for another meeting. But I just wanted to indicate the APSA letter. I don't seem to have received it yet, and it would have been helpful. I don't know if it was circulated, but whether the public protector was going to comment on that, I...
Circulated, we can explain why you didn't, but it was not an intention.
Okay.
Not to.
I understand, and hopefully the public protector was going to will respond now on that letter, but also in writing. And if I'm not here when she gets to answer my questions, it's fine. I'll pick it up from the secretary of the committee. Thanks, Chair. Firstly, just on the issue of the financial constraints, and you'll recall, public protector, through your chair, that in October we did in our budgetary review and recommendation report recommend additional funding for additional investigative capacity and for litigation costs. It's an issue which I have raised in the past. It is a concern that there are more and more review cases being brought, and therefore in meeting those review cases there will be additional funding required by the Public Protector's Office. Now, regrettably, I'm sure the Public Protector is aware of the response of National Treasury to our recommendation and request for additional funding. To quote them, they said, due to constrained fiscal outlook, the scope to provide additional funding has been limited. Departments, public entities, and constitutional institutions are required to reprioritize funds within their existing baselines to fund any emerging priorities. So we do sympathize with the public protector when it comes to additional funding, but again, this is the response of National Treasury. We can again request, but again, we see now, following the national budget earlier this year, that the funding fiscal constraints and outlooks is even more severe. So then it means that we need to, as you've tried to do and as your CFO has indicated, acting CFO, that every cent must be spent correctly. And so it is a matter of concern when I see 8 million rand spent on the CIX APSA speaker matter. That would be a very substantial amount, and we know there are various parts of reviews that are involved in that court case. But that is a substantial amount of your, that was last year's financial, where you received 300 million in total, and to spend 8 million in one court case is a very substantial amount. My colleagues have referred to the more specifics of that, but it is when one gets into a bit more detail on the leg relating to the APSA SA Reserve Bank and the severe findings of the full bench, which we dealt with last meeting on, I think it was the 8th of March. And subsequent to that, we've now received information to the effect that some of the answers of the public protector were not necessarily correct. Some of the media reports go so far as to say that the public protector might have been misleading us. So I'd like to again just raise those issues as far as it is possible to respond to that in the light of, I think, what the public protector indicated last time was it was going to be a subject of appeal. Now, whether those matters are being appealed, and particularly the non-reference to the meetings with the presidency, that in the papers, in the affidavits, I understand that it was only referred to firstly in the answering affidavits, not in the initial papers. Secondly, there was no reference to the second meeting with the presidency. That was a matter that was raised by the full bench of the court as a matter of great concern. Secondly, the instruction to the SIU, when the public protector has got no powers to instruct the SIU to do anything. And then thirdly, the breach of Section 7(9) of the Public Protectors Act in not affording both APSA and the South African Reserve Bank an opportunity to respond when there was going to be an adverse finding against them, when that opportunity was presented to both the presidency and the State Security Agency, and that the court used the word disingenuous, which is a nice way of saying that you might not be telling the truth. So, and then of course the two issues of reasonably suspected of bias and not understanding her constitutional duty. So those are scathing judgments that stand by a full bench, and I'd like to know what part of that is being taken further on appeal. I appreciate it would have to be a petition now to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and if the public protector has any response to that High Court and response to the lawyers' letters from ABSA. Then, Chair, just on the policy on the appointment of special advisors, a number of questions have been asked in that regard, and I would align myself with those questions. It is a document that was filed on the 4th of April. Where will the funding come from those special advisors? How would that fit in with the existing structure? And has there been a discussion with the Minister of Finance, the Public Service Commission, as required by the Act? And again, how will that fit into the Public Protector's existing Act that allows you to apply for the secondment of officials? But this, we are now looking at a specific appointment of special advisors to executive managers at the Public Protector. Thank you, Chair, from my side.
From the Chair, your position is a position of leadership, and we expecting leaders to be proactive. When you last appeared before us, we were concerned that you did not investigate the role of the politicians in the external matter. And you focused on what the officials did or did not do. Can you tell us why you have not gone back to this matter and do what this committee thought should have been done at that stage? Secondly, the question of lawfare in this country is a problem. We cannot run government through the courts, and therefore, in my view, meeting with the president, meeting with any minister, meeting with ABSA, if any adversarial finding is to be made, wouldn't be wrong, because it would assist us not to unnecessarily take these matters to courts. Why would you hide the fact that you met with the president? Why would you not meet with ABSA if the need existed? Why would you not meet with any ministers before adverse findings are made? Because the Constitution says that your office is there to support democracy, not to find reasons to punish those that are running the state. Is it maybe that we really don't understand the concept of supporting democracy? Should we really be always finding adverse, making adverse findings? Shouldn't we have some constructive engagement with those that in government to avoid turning our state into some lawfare situation? Uh, also, you know, deputies are not appointed for luxury. If you had your deputy here, he would be assisting, sitting next to you. The question is, what delegations have you made to the deputy? The deputy is not here, and now I'm forced to ask for a break for tea so that you can be assisted to deal with this question. But if your deputy was here, you had delegated some responsibility, he would be assisting you. So I'm really going to ask for a tea break so that they can assist you. Honorable Horn?
No, he's not. I want to ask a question. Sorry, it's just one I've omitted to ask.
Is no, fine.
There's six women here from the Public Protector's Office. Do they not employ men? Why are there no men here? And where is Kevin Malunga?
I welcome the fact that there are more women than men because women are reliable. Okay, we'll break for a last question.
Thank you, Chairperson, once more. Chairperson, another concern is that of a spokesperson of the institution, Ms. Cleopatra Musana. I'm informed that she's no longer the spokesperson of the institution. There is Obaso Kwale, and there are very serious concerns, public protector, that they are paging of employees in the office. So may you tell this portfolio committee where Ms. Musana is? Is she still with the public protector's office or what?
Thank you. Honorable members, let's just take 5 minutes, grab a cup of tea, and allow the public protector to organize the responses. Because
actually, I can respond, Chairperson. I don't need to consult.
No, I want to be fair. I want to be fair to you because I also want you to do justice to the questions put. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable members, bless that. Advocate Mapamane, before you answer, is it not a matter of concern to you the fact that the Hawks are running ahead of you, raiding the offices of the Premier of Northwest Province, the office of the Premier of the Free State, when you have had an opportunity to look into what is happening in those provincial governments as part of your responsibility to support democracy? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'll respond to the questions as asked by various members, honorable members. I'll start with the honorable Mutampo on the questions which you have posed, and I think it was also a follow-up from honorable Horn and Honorable Swart regarding the petition of the Supreme Court of Appeal. The appeal was dismissed with costs. In fact, it was a cost. It was an order which already was, which was delivered on that particular day, dismissing the appeal, and the intention of taking the matter to the Supreme Court of Appeal, I've mentioned even the last time, Chairperson, that as members of Parliament, I'll also need your support, and because, I mean, as a Chapter 9 institution, being a constitutional body, performing my functions, which the Constitution says without fear, favor, or prejudice. So if you have a decision or a judgment like this one, which has personal cost order, which has an impact on the independence of the power protector, and further, which instill fear on the power protector to perform her functions, hence the focus on the personal cost order. But then if you read the judgment, Honorable Horn, it will take you through the whole process of what are the those issues which are written, which are possible bias on the part of the power protector, which details we will also present in the documents we will be presenting to the Supreme Court of Appeal to narrate the true reflection of what exactly transpired and what the intention of also appealing that, because at the end of the day, that is a stifling or an obstacle for the power protector to continue performing her responsibilities. On the allegation that I've lied to Parliament on the 6th of March that I met with the President, on that particular day, I've referred the members of the House to go through my affidavit, which again is my side of the story. It's so unfortunate that this is what I also presented to court, but yes, the court decided to process or believe on what the other parties have said. In my affidavit, again, it's on our website. If you read from paragraph 171 of the affidavit, which will give details on the meeting with the presidency And again, Chairperson, it also goes directly to the provisions of Section 79, subsection 9. Where a person has been implicated, you give the person an opportunity to respond. Paragraph 171, I've indicated that I've received an email from the President in which there was a need for a meeting because they wanted to clarify their response to the Section 79 we've issued to the President. And in that meeting, I indicated in the affidavit, I met with the Presidency legal advisor, with the legal services, and with one of the senior investigators. Paragraph 173, I'm also clarifying that after the discussion, we were discussing the remedial action again, that issue of not being antagonistic to say, this is what I'm going to do, it's a commission of inquiry. But then, because the matter was pending before court, then there was an issue of there is an existing proclamation by SIU which was never finalized because Judge Heath only issued a media statement. I've mentioned it in my affidavit. And the court itself, that's why I said there were contradicting paragraphs in the judgment where it was saying there is the matter was finalized, but then it comes back and say, but there was a media statement. Therefore, it means that report, there was no report of Judge Heath. It was only the media statement. Therefore, Honorable Mutap, if you go through my affidavit, you'll then get the full information. And again, I indicated the previous time, I met with the Presidency as far and I declared this meeting because it was the meeting to discuss this particular report. The other meetings I have with the Presidency are relating to your normal operations of the Public Protector Office because the very same legal services or legal advisor, they are dealing with all the matters we are referring to the President when we investigate executive members' ethics, in fact, executive members, especially on the violation or alleged violation of the Executive Members' Ethics Act. On the institutional instability, I would say the institution is stable, Honorable Mutapo. CEO Zondo decided to resign because of health issues. I wonder what would I have done to make sure that she stays with the institution. Mr. Dlamini also resigned on his free will. And again, remember when you are leading such a constitutional institution, and again the issue of integrity, issues of performance, leading by example. Possibly there were instances where there were issues which were not performed according to the responsible or to the provided for targets. Therefore, he decided to resign. And I wouldn't stop a person from resigning if they feel that they would need to leave the institution. The acting CEO, Ms. Ntoriseng Mutsitsi, unfortunately, she's on sick leave. I didn't bring her along. She clearly stated she will act, and for starters, the post of the CEO, since it's vacant, we've got savings. We should be accumulating savings in the compensation of employees. Therefore, Ms. Mutsitsi decided not to take the acting allowance. I know there was an instance where the approvals were done and some money was paid into her account and she declared that she wouldn't want to accept that. But she's the executive manager in the institution and she's playing that role. And I must indicate that since she's taken over, there's extremely good performance because we've managed to deal with a lot of those issues which were raised in the audit report. The findings, we've reduced our irregular expenditure from the previous financial years, which we have that information. Since 2013, how the institution was performing, and to 2017-18, where we've reduced a number of issues. So unfortunately, possibly the work in that institution is too much. People get sick and they can't cope, but she's still acting. And the post is was advertised. We shortlisted three candidates, and they pulled out Honorable Chairperson. Again, you'll never know why unless people are scared to come and be responsible for that huge institution. Then we had to request our recruitment agency to go ahead and again source additional candidates. We have interviewed five candidates and we've identified two possible candidates. And the delay now is the vetting, because again that's the issue of fast tracking their vetting to make sure that when they resume employment they are properly vetted. But now that is creating a lot of problems, because if you've got a acting CEO who's also burdened, and the executive managers, the kind of work they are having, adding additional responsibility again is something else. We are looking into various options with HR, how in the meantime, whilst we are waiting for their vetting, we can have a stable or a sort of a stable arrangement where we can have a person who will only play that responsibility as CEO. Acting CFO, again, Honorable Mutapo, those were the findings of the AG, where the issue is asked, what are you doing on consequence management? And that I've indicated the last time why there was that settlement agreement, because the matter was the CCMA, there were negotiations by the said person to then leave the institution. So we paid him for 8 months, and in that 8 months, we requested a secondment from SSA and Treasury. So Treasury indicated they don't wouldn't be able to second a person because of their capacity constraints as well. And then SSA indicated they can second a person who's available, who can assist for that 8 months. So that 8 months was ending now, end of March. Hence, we've appointed Ms. Dick. Ms. Dick is not level 12. Ms. Dick is level 13. She's the senior manager, and that's one thing we promised the previous year, that our compliance to AG's findings will improve, because now we've got the senior manager financial services. Now she's at the level where we could appoint her to level 14. She's level 13, and indeed our policy does provide that we can appoint, especially for those who are appointed for the public protector, who are doing your public protector work, not in the other in the private office of the public protector. And what are the compromising issues on the 870 million? Currently, in fact, the letter which was written to the Speaker copied the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and Minister of Finance. The key issues which, even if we don't get this 870, because that is more of the full complement of the structure, but then it was in an indication that we've got some accumulative deficit since 2013, which I think in the previous portfolio committee meeting, we have provided the accumulation of the millions which we've been accumulating throughout these years. And I think one of the slides we've indicated that the goods and services, if you have calculated the contractual obligations, which is an issue which we cannot exist or we cannot sustain the operations of the institution, around 57 million. Unfortunately, we only have 52 million out of that. The balance of 5 million will be an issue of deficit. Or in addition to that, you've got your discretionary additional operational issues, which we also cannot operate without them, and they've been there in the system, which amount to 24 million. Therefore, 24 plus 5 is 29 million. The structure currently, we have 363 warm bodies, and out of that, we have we had around 190 investigative staff, which is core. But then we've received several resignations as well on our staff complement. For the 17-18 financial year, we have 5 senior investigators who've resigned. They've received better offers somewhere else. 3 investigators, better offers, and then 1 assistant manager, which is under administration. So that is the structure we have, Honorable Muta Pau. The spokesperson is no longer a spokesperson of the Public Protector, because that one is internal. She's transferred internally to another section of communication within the Public Protector office. There's no issue that she's perched, but then that is an issue of a very serious issue of trust between the Public Protector and the spokesperson, or even the chairperson and the spokesperson. Therefore, if that trust is no longer there, the employee is still within the institution performing the work, and there's no money which has been wasted in that particular instance. And Honorable Kosana, they agreed, the whole country, we understand the issue of fiscal challenges, and I must indicate that the institution, the last quarter, especially with this acting CEO, we've managed to make sure that we rigorously issue a circular, have various serious cost-saving measures, no longer procuring bottled water, no longer traveling. We had to make sure that the staff, during their investigations, instead of going out for meetings, then we have to write to the government departments and ministers and whoever who's subject of investigation to come to the Public Protector's office or in the Public Protector's office. That's what we are doing to save on costs. The posts which have been vacated, we have not filled them because some of them, especially the administration, we said we can survive without those ones. But the key ones is the CEO and the CFO, which we will be filling. And again, the CFO post as a senior manager, she was very senior where she was. I mean, because she's a CA by qualification. And at the level she is, the difference between her salary and the CFO is not that much. So that acting allowance we are paying also is not that much in terms of saying possibly there's a lot of money which we are spending in that particular aspect. So the current structure to financial challenges, that's what we are doing. In fact, that's why we don't even now want to. We are showing the portfolio committee if we are fully functional and as an institution which is serving 55 plus million South Africans and investigating any conduct in state affairs, all government departments, state institutions, with their various mandates. I mean, I was looking at the funding of legal aid, I mean, which is funded to around 1 billion or 800 million, which their mandate is focused on a certain mandate. But then in this particular instance, we are expected to be assisting across the board and various mandates which the institution is having. It's a challenge which we're still facing. What is PP doing to assist, or what are we doing? Again, I think that's a question which has been asked. I don't know by who. But then DPSA has been approached. We've approached them beginning of this month, especially for the turnaround strategy. I think it's Honorable Breitenbach, you were asking, it's a 2012 structure, what are we doing, or Honorable Horn. but already we've approached the PSA because we don't have money to employ very expensive turnaround strategies. But then we've approached the PSA, and fortunately they've agreed to assist so that they can also come up with a very innovative structure for us. How can we maximally perform our mandate with the minimal number of people or staff we are having, which is also very worn out. A number of them are worn out because of the number of investigations which they are having. So we're trying to deal with that particular aspect. So stability in the office, I've indicated why the CEO and now the CFO as well, what is the current arrangement. The DPP is always absent. The DPP's delegations, Honorable Chairperson, you asked as well, his responsibilities was also to assist in the process of training. We had a lot of challenges with the quality of our reports nationally. And again, there was a pending investigation which was done a contract was entered into. It's part of the training which needs to be finalized through GIZ on procurement law, which was in the middle of my term, or when I started already they were conducting training. So we need to cover all the investigative stuff. Unfortunately, we also depend on their schedule to be able to cover all provinces. So DPP is assisting the office in that particular aspect, because if we have then the quality reports and also our new templates and what processes to follow to make sure that we have a complete investigation, a report is properly drafted. Again, we include the training on our rules and the service standards which we are having to make sure that we are an efficient organization. The settlement agreements of the CEO is only one which has been I've indicated it's payment of 8 months, and after the secondment from SSA, we were not incurring costs as far as that is concerned. I think I'll just ask the CFO to indicate the financial, or how much is it which was paid. And then the officials who've resigned, no severance package is paid. I mean, they willingly resigned. So no any financial implications to the institution. The level 12 and level 14, Honorable Horn, I've already explained, and what are the prescripts which are available. The rules, they do cover a number of issues which we've raised, especially the service standards, which service standards was indicating after receiving a complaint, how often do you update the complainant? Every 6 weeks, and how long we should be writing the first letter to the complainant, meeting with the complainant if there's additional information which is needed, and if we send out a Section 7-9, how long do we expect it back. On the issue of maiden guardian, I'll have to check what issues have been addressed, especially what the provisions of the Maiden and Guardian is saying. We'll respond to that in writing, I think, if you can note that. And then on the involvement, why no political involvement on Friday investigated? As I've indicated, the report already was finalized since 2014. In fact, 2015, think tank took a decision. The report is ready. Then there's no there's nothing in the file which has been declared in court as Rule 53 where there were any indication. And even the EXCO, which was giving the responsibility of this particular project, was signed by the accounting officer or the HOD. So the issue of own initiative, again, the report investigation was complete. The report was already in a draft format. It was only to issue the Section 7-9, receive the responses and incorporate them and then issue the report.
Isn't leadership saying that already a committee like this has already said that was a serious omission not to investigate the role of the politicians, that you should have gone back to say you deal with the omission? You can't just say it was completed.
Chairperson, I mean, that is a new thing. We met in March. It means we need to register a new file and then start the investigation afresh. But then remember, Mfuntus Ofikio, I can't investigate the report which is issued, which is taken on review. That one is an issue of taking it forward and saying, let's open a file and then let's start investigation as far as the role of the politicians is concerned. So if it's recorded like that, that open a file and then we proceed, we can do that. In fact, we will be doing that, it's fine. And then on the relationship between PP and complainants, complainants are updated, Honorable Horn. Again, it's a challenge of the capacity within the institution. Investigators, they know the service standards are there. Every 6 weeks, inform the complainant. As far as the complaints which we receive from the ones you are responding to, or you are asking about the Malusi Gigaba matter, that the complainant has not been informed. On that particular issue, the DA complaints, when during the meeting with Honorable, with Mr. Maimane in December, where we agreed that all updates will be sent to him so that at his level, because there were instances where sometimes we send the update to the complainant being a member of DA, and then you find that an update is already in the media. Same applies to this one. You find that when we also sometimes are asked by the members of the media about this investigation, we respond to media questions and you find that the information is in, it's out there. So in this particular one, yes, EMEA requests us to prioritize. What have we done? The 2016 have indicated that we've employed one additional senior investigator who's focusing purely on EMEA matters. And already that senior investigator found several investigations which were happening. I can confirm the numbers in writing, but then I think there are more than 15 investigations which involve this particular aspect. So he is still trying to catch up with all the investigations which we are having and prioritize them and finalize them speedily. When we can't finalize, the Executive Members Ethics Act does provide, when we can't finalize the matter within 30 days, we indeed write to the President to inform the President we've received this complaint and we couldn't finalize it within 30 days, and then President be informed that once the report is issued, we'll send it to you and we will continue investigating this matter under the Public Protector Act, including the Executive Members Ethics Act. So the rules do that. The rules provide for the time frames and what we need to prioritize. But then again, I think when members of Parliament are going through the rules, you'll see the details in which we've dealt with and again consulted with the senior state law advisors from the Department of Justice in finalizing the rules. But then on that mail in Guardian one, I will make sure that I respond in writing and all the issues which have been raised. The APSA matter, that matter is will be taken. The petition will petition the Supreme Court of Appeal. I think I've responded to on that matter when I was responding to Honorable Mutapo, and issues of competence and understanding of the law. And the report itself dealt with, in fact, the affidavit is clearly stating what process are followed in the investigation of that particular matter. Again, that matter, the report was already there when I joined the Public Protector, just that it's few changes which I made in that particular instance. And again, investigating or instructing the SIU, I've indicated the last time that the same court found that the Public Protector can instruct the President in certain instances. So that was the process we followed to make sure that that institution, and again, I must say, setting aside of only the remedial action in that particular issue. The relook of the organogram, I've indicated already, DPSA has been approached. And the team they've met with the DPSA last week, and the process is ongoing because they are going to bring help us to come up with a model which will be able to assist in delivering services. And I must indicate that, again, repeating, our investigators are worn out with the number of cases they are having. AG GRAP standard. The number of backlogs and number of complaints, Honorable Horn, I thought we will deal with, because normally we deal with those in our annual report, but then I can send the detailed number of backlog cases we're having, and we can also send the number of investigations which are at hand currently. In the previous, last year, Chairperson, you requested us to even present the first quarter and second quarter. I think there was a stage where you requested us. I don't know whether it was, yeah, but you requested us to do that. Hence, we included the performance of the institution, but we will provide the number of complaints which we are having and how many so far. And it will reflect, Honorable Horn, on the impact of the how worn out our officials are because of the challenges they are facing. It's even worse now because we had to we had contract workers or trainee employees, Honorable Skosan. There are also that number which we had to let go end of March, and originally our compensation of employees was 254 million. So after they've left, there's an additional 4 million which is there. But it has an impact because they were helping or they were training under the senior investigators, especially law graduates. But we will find other means of getting that additional support because they were very helpful to the senior investigators in speedily dealing with the matters. How much is the deficit? Honorable Breitenbach, the current deficit which we had was around 15 million at the end of March 31, and the Department of Justice came to our rescue. They've availed that, so I think we can give the details of how much we've used, but then that has helped the institution a lot, especially to deal with the closure of books this current financial year. Security expenditure, which has increased, I think I'll ask the CFO, acting CFO, to just explain that. Why do we have that increase? Because we had to also compromise on the issue of upgrading our security since we don't have the financial means. Signing of performance agreements, all our staff since 2017-18, they've signed their performance agreements, and we've resolved, or since arriving, because we had a two-year backlog of them not wanting to sign because they had issues with the policy which was there, which they alleged was changed without consulting them. So finally that process has been done. All of them have signed. Well, there are few which were discovered by the Auditor General, I think one or two,
which consequence management has been implemented, because and they are at senior management level, they know they need to lead by example. So everyone has signed for 17-18. For 18-19, it's a process which we must do before the end of May. No funds for SNG, how it impacts, I've indicated that for investigations, we invite or we request departments to come to our offices as a part of cost-saving measures on issues of our investigators traveling to conduct the investigations. Unless inspection in loco, that's an exception where we need to make sure that we avail transport. CMS not operational since 2013. I think members of the House know that there was that 13 million which Treasury had to condone because of the way that money was a wasteful expenditure. So the Microsoft licenses have been installed because that's the highest cost which we're having. Again, CFO can indicate how much we are spending as far as that is concerned. So the current process of CMS is that we need that additional, that 8 million we've indicated, which we don't have in our budget, to operationalize it. Now that has a delay or an impact on the efficiency of our senior investigators, where they need to at least know, keep track of their files, make sure that the files are up to date, and then the investigation is progressing well, they keep the complainants informed. So that has an, it's a tool which we don't have. We are using your spreadsheet currently to keep records of all our files. It has an impact on service delivery and efficiency of the institution. The security manager is not suspended. Honorable Breitenbach is not suspended, is attending, is on training at SSA. Is still within the institution.
And then I'm very sorry to interrupt you, but before you move off the electronic case management system question and before I forget, I want to know who's developing it and who's installing it and who's going to run it.
Before it was developed by, because it's they were saying it's an off-the-shelf kind of development. Before it was developed by Accenture, I'll provide the details, but they were funded, they were going to be funded, in fact, yeah, it was, they developed the first phase, we will provide the details on that, and then it has not been installed. What we've done as an institution, we have all the processes, the SEs, and then the process going forward of how the system is going to be operational. But then currently the negotiations are finding within various government departments how we can be assisted. I know the team and the CEF, acting CEO, and the IT officials have engaged with, we've requested also from SSA and CETA to assist the institution in this, whatever capacity they are having. So it's a development, and finalization within the current available resources we are having, because we don't have 8 million additional to do that. But then if Microsoft has to do that, because it's a Microsoft process, whatever money which will be required, hence if we can get additional fund, we will be able to pay that. But then we will be saving a lot if we are not using private companies to do this. The acting CEO is the executive manager within the institution. It's not seconded. The CFO, how many people were interviewed? 5 people were interviewed last week. And we've identified some candidates. We must still go for competency assessment must still go for vetting. Again, it will still take us. We will have to negotiate for fast-tracking of those processes, especially from the SSA side. HIOC trip. The Malawi trip was not an IOC related. It was, in fact, it was not an IOC board meeting. It was an IOMA related matter because it formed part of the training, and IOC was providing training. It was not a meeting, but it was a training which was provided. It was on accountability and transparency, and it was. The trip which IOC, as the chairperson of IOC does pay for the trip I take to attend these meetings, and they also pay for the CEO, because the CEO of Public Protector is also the part of the board meeting. So the CEO couldn't attend, and then I traveled with the acting chief of staff and the protector. I can't travel without the protector. I think those are related to security reasons. The acting chief of staff was going to be making sure that there's a report, there's follow-ups, and taking of all the minutes, the reports for the institution, what issues to be followed up.
Respond to all aspects of the question, because one leg of the question was, did you sit through all the meetings or not? And also,
I'm still coming to that, Chairperson. Okay. Training offered, and did you attend full? I didn't attend all the I attended 2 days of the third day. I didn't attend because I had an investigation, which was coupled with, it was supposed to be a State of the Nation, but then the key issue was the investigation. There is a complaint which I was investigating. There was a meeting on that particular day which I had to chair. Malawi. Okay, did I chair? It was not an IOC board meeting. So the board meeting, I chair the board meetings. This one was a training. The appointment of a special advisor. The assistance the person will be providing is general in terms of legal, political, and economic assistance, especially on matters relating to the performance of or the issues which relate to legal issues and litigations. Yes, Minister of Finance has been consulted, because it says consult the Minister of Finance and then inform Parliament. The cost related to that, the savings which are there of the CEO post will be used, and the person is appointed only for 3 months to assist legal services, because we only have one manager, legal senior manager, legal services, who must do all the work relating to this and advise on all contracts, all MOUs, and on all that. And that is provided for in terms of the Public Protector Act, Section 7, Subsection 3, and that's the process we followed according to the Public Protector to do that. The APSA letter, Honorable Swart, I haven't seen the letter, but since I've responded to Honorable Mutapo that again, maybe if the chairperson can forward that letter.
I ordered that the letter be sent to you. And the letter has been sent to you.
The letter is not sent to us. Okay, if we receive the letter, chairperson will respond to the letter. Normally we make sure that we respond. We haven't I just heard on the media about that letter. So I'll respond, but again, I'll attach the what I said during the engagement on the 6th and what my affidavit is saying in that particular aspect. Honorable Swart, the constraints, yes, I acknowledge that, but I think the biggest challenge we're having are those
The letter was sent on the 29th, and today is the 17th. That may suggest that there's some dysfunctionality in your office. A letter sent on the 29th, today is the 17th, you haven't received it. What does that mean?
To who was it sent, Chairperson? Then I'll have to deal with that person seriously, and if I can get that proof now, because normally we have Juanita in the office who's dealing with parliamentary, and I'll have to check. And we'll have to check our IT system, why we didn't receive. Because the same thing happened, Chairperson, for the meeting of March, where I heard the Chairperson speaking on the media that we're calling the public protector. I didn't receive those, but I only received the letter 2 days before you calling me and the preparations. But I think, let me get that proof, and again, let's go to our IT system to check what is the problem.
These issues of capacity in your office that are being raised have really to be addressed, because we can have, we sit in Parliament, we say we have communicated with your office, your office hasn't received any communication from us. It's like we are lying, or we are trying to cast aspersion on your office. And it's not good for you, it's not good for us as Parliament.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that. And can I request here and now, any communication must be sent to Ephraim Kabinde, my PA, and even myself, because there's no email I don't respond to. So I think from now onwards, can you forward that email? You forward it to Benita. And future communication, can they be sent directly to me? On that one, that's what I expect. So if they can be sent directly to me, I'll make sure that I respond. Thank you, Chairperson, for clarifying that, because it was also a concern on my side that I hear things on the media, but the Chairperson is not communicating to me directly. Well, Honorable Salt was saying the matter of concern is the expenditure on the money on the matter of
dialogue. But in our records, we sent to the people you are referring to, we even say specifically copy to you. Yeah, and the person who communicated, they say copied to us. So let me not debate and just say that I think we'll need to hear more about the capacity in your office. And also, when we talk about the office of the public protector, we're not talking about an individual. We're talking about the office, and then you can't be responsible for everything. The reason that you have got to employ staff, it means that other people must take responsibility. That's why we are even concerned about the absence of the deputy public protector in this office, in this meeting.
Okay. I think the Honorable Swart was raising the issue of media reports that are misleading, or PP misleading. I think it relates to this APSA matter. Again, I'm saying I think you need to get, I'll provide the information I submitted to court on my affidavit.
See, now we are here to also account to the public. We can't tell the public that you will submit what you submitted to the court. Because part of accountability is that the public must know what you are doing and what you are doing. So can you respond to the questions of Honorable Swart on record, not refer us to the court?
That's why I'm saying, he says there were media reports that public protector is misleading Parliament, and the very same letter we are referring to is the APSA one. And I've responded to Honorable Mutapo that the affidavit, paragraph 171, I've clarified that the meeting I held with the presidency in the presence of the legal advisor and one senior investigator was relating to the investigation.
The other meetings I never mentioned in the affidavit because they are not relating to the investigation. Therefore, I will also still include that in my response to the chairperson when I receive the letter from APSA alleging that I've misled Parliament. Again, I will still clearly state that I met with the presidency legal advisor. I didn't meet with the president to discuss this matter. And the other meetings with the presidency legal advisor were relating to the work of the public protector in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act. That I've instructed the SIU. I stated again earlier and even last on the 6th of March that the public protector, the remedial action needs to be specific, needs to be appropriate, and that was the appropriate way of dealing with this matter because the SIU never issued a report. Therefore, the reopening of that proclamation was necessary so that the matter can be dealt with by the SIU because there was never a finality. And I've indicated in the previous meeting that that issue was that both Judge Davis and Judge Heath discovered that the transaction was unlawful. The breach of Section 79, I gave the Section 79 to APSA, they responded. I gave the Section 79 to Reserve Bank, they responded. I gave the Section 79 to National Treasury, they responded. I gave the Section 79 to the President, then the response from the DG, they gave the letter and indicated that they would want to have a meeting, and I met with the legal advisor. They clarified their challenge of us, of me, including the Commission of Inquiry, which is a matter of before court. That was leading to bias against still Commissioner Swart, Honourable Swart. That will be dealt with in the. It's part of the finding of personal cost because that relates to personal cost, and then the order was the issue of personal cost. And Chairperson's position of leadership, role of Estina, I agree, Chairperson, that matter, the file will be open, then the matter will still be investigated now purely on issues of the roles of the politicians in this particular matter. So the chairperson has acknowledged the meeting that I can meet with any person in the investigation, including president, ministers, and everyone. And then we need to make sure that we also, in fact, the public protector, in the course of the investigation, yes, I'll have to make sure that I give everybody an opportunity and investigate all elements which are picked up along the way. I think that will help because especially the new investigations and again the processes we're following and making sure that before the investigation is complete and the Section 79 is issued, all processes are followed and that the hawks is running ahead. Unfortunately, Chairperson, it's the issue of capacity constraints which the institution is having, where you're still in the process of investigating. The investigator, especially the conduct failure matters, the person is having 10 to 20 files which are complicated files, and it takes time for them, and again depending on the quicker response, because we also need to give the complaint, the person implicated or the person complains against, an opportunity to respond. Normally we give them 7 to 10 days to respond. So our processes, sometimes they do take time. But if we had enough capacity, then it means our turnaround time will be very efficient. And I must indicate that from the Premier of the Northwest, I don't remember we have an investigation relating to the current one. It's only one matter we are investigating, which relates to one transportation agency. And that one is one of the backlog matters which have been there, but we almost we are in moving with speed in that. The Premier of the Free State, I think it relates to the Estina matter, because a lot of our findings, again, also, or the people who are implicated, it's similar things relating to the violation of the PFMA. But then there's no complaint which was lodged directly with that. But now, because of this own initiative which we will proceed with, we will have to look into his role into the Estina matter. Indeed, we want, or the institution would want, to make sure that we investigate matters very efficiently and quickly, Chairperson, because it's also for the benefit of the very same person who's alleged to have committed any maladministration impropriety, because it also has an impact on their character, on their standing in society. Therefore, if we finalize the matter quicker and they know what is their standpoint, it will be beneficial, because, I mean, we know that as a country believing in the rule of law, justice delayed is like justice denied. So we need to make sure that we finalize cases quicker. The delegations to the DPP have indicated what are the delegations, Chairperson, which are given to the DPP. And I think that's where a lot of work, because another thing we, one is having, the challenge which the institution is having is investigations, and the issues relating to the administration, whereas the DPP is like also a person who's at the policy level, where if we engage at the policy level, some of the issues are not issues which can be that helpful in making sure that the institution is running efficiently. But I must indicate that on issues relating to investigation, especially the training part of it, that's where he's assisting the institution. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
This year we are celebrating the life and times of Nelson Mandela and other icons. And the greatest tribute we can pay to them is to ensure that this democracy survives. And also, when our people elect government, they are not electing angels. And that's why Nelson Mandela and others made sure that there are institutions supporting democracy. Now, we cannot have a situation where the democracy, the people who lead in this democracy, are raided by the hawks. The premiers are raided, the ministers are raided, there is lawfare. It means that the support that we give to government is not adequate, because if it's adequate, leadership should foresee where problems may arise so that the necessary support is given to government, because it may suggest that we don't need this democracy because the people we elect are not capable of leading. And that cannot be the case. We don't elect angels. We have put in institutions supporting democracy so that government must be supported. And also that we don't have situations where the budget that must go to service delivery is going to court for reviewing of cases. So I think these are the things that you must talk to us about. We cannot be voting for money for you to defend yourself against ministers and against premiers. Our constitution is a perfect constitution. I think we want this constitution to work. We have no problem with the constitution. So I think that the questions that have been raised here also require that you need to come back to us in writing about some of these things, because we want institutions supporting democracy to strengthen and support government so that an impression is not created that our people are not capable of running government, because it's not true. Our people are capable of running government, and Mandela is happy that he has people who can run government, and those who must support this government must support those who are running government.
Before we do follow-ups, Mr. Chair, might I just ask the public protector, there were two questions that I asked that weren't answered, if you would just be so good as to answer them. Thank you.
And then we'll do the follow-ups, because before you even do that follow-up, my office is inundated with people who are sending letters complaining that you are not attending to their matters. And it is not our position as this committee that we must interfere with your work. So when you give us a report, we also need to know what are the backlogs that we are having. There appears to be complaints which are more than 5 years old. We need to be told. Why? Because we cannot sit here as the committee to do the work of the public protector, and we don't want to interfere with the office of public protector. We respect that your office is independent. It must work without fear or favor. So we just need to be sure that you are accountable to the public when they lodge complaints. If you are, there are delays, you must inform the public why there are delays. Don't wait for us to ask you why there are delays in your office, because we have no intention of interfering with your office or dictating to your office how it should function. We respect that office. Honorable Breitenbach, your follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not follow-up. It's two questions that weren't answered. I asked if the public protector has appointed any person in your office in the capacity of a special advisor, and bearing in mind that she wants to appoint special advisors or has appointed special advisors, what role does the deputy public protector or her exco and senior management play if they're not there to advise her?
Chairperson, thank you for your reminding that is Nelson Mandela here. And as Chapter 9 institution, we need to be there to support constitutional democracy. And unfortunately, if we are not fully funded or fully capacitated, it will be an issue for the public protector to be able to deal with all these issues of, if there are raids in Premier's office, it's a matter of issues which have an impact on good governance. Indeed, the public protector should be intervening. But now the public protector, if you have more than 4,000 cases or backlogs, which one is dealing with every month, not having additional capacity to deal with the matters, it's a challenge, but we will respond in writing and reflect on all the challenges and the capacity and the number of work each investigator is having, and try to find innovative ways of assisting and making sure that this impact is dealt with. Because at the end of the day, the very same people who are complaining to you, Chairperson, there are matters which were lodged 5 years, 10 years, or in fact 5 years ago, a lot of them are 5 years ago, are matters which were supposed to be dealt with in those financial years because they were funded in those financial years, but again, they also have an impact on the current budget which we have as an institution. So the issue of how the budget which is allocated is not the issue of going to court. Again, that is the issue of performing my duties in terms of the Constitution. And in the performance of my duties, then there are issues which have an impact on the independence of the public protector and the performance of my work without fear or favor. And hence, there will be cases where the institution won't be defending just because then the courts will have to decide how they decide on those particular matters to make sure that we deal with this. And then the person, the special advisor, yes, the person has been appointed for 3 months. As I indicated, that we only have the savings in our compensation of employees to work with the legal services to make sure that we deal with all those matters which are pending, especially the reports which are taken on review. Out of the 20, it's only 7 which is was taken on review during the public protector's term. So all those cases, they will be dealt with. And the next question was... Honorable Brighton Bach.
Let me repeat it for you. What role does the Deputy Public Protector, your exco and senior management play then,
okay,
if they're not to advise you? And while you're telling us about this, please tell us who the special advisor is.
The DPP, I've indicated again, is busy with the training on how, especially the quality assurance, the quality of our reports, and the training for procurement law. I've indicated that several times. The EXCO, especially the executive managers, there's an executive manager responsible for administrative justice and service delivery. They are worn out. I mean, she has a lot of work in such a way that I indicated to Honorable Mutapo that you have that person who, if you appoint her as the acting CEO, then you are still adding, because the responsibility of that branch is her responsibility, and they are receiving a lot of complaints as because those are early resolution matters and service delivery related matters. And then the other executive measures, we've got the good governance advocate for it, responsible for good governance and integrity branch. And that's where you have your very complex matters. And we have a lot of backlog matters where you've got matters dating back to 2012-13. And that's where the backlog is of complex matters. Though it might not be a huge number because it was around, when I arrived, it was around 193, I think. Currently, it has reduced to 93 matters. And all of those matters, they need a lot of time to investigate. Again, if you have investigators who have more than 10 or 20 cases, it takes a lot of time. And the other executive manager is the one who's acting currently as the CEO, responsible for complaints and stakeholder management and all the issues relating to customer services and those complaints which are supposed to come directly to the public protector's executive managers, and then if they are not resolved, to the public protector. The person who's been appointed as a special advisor is Mr. Sibusiso Nyembe. He's an attorney, but also has a lot of banking and related qualifications, and also will be assisting, as I indicated, assisting the legal services because he practiced as an attorney on conveyancing and stuff like that.
Many highly qualified graduates unemployed. and we can have a situation where we employ people in positions of leadership when they are supposed to be providing leadership to institutions. They are being trained on procurement. There must be something wrong somewhere. I think we'll need a proper explanation where people who must be leading institutions, a deputy public protector is a leader of the institution. And then he's being trained in procurement and things like that.
No, it's not trained. GPP is overseeing the training, the capacitation of our senior investigators. He's not being trained. He's the one who's responsible for that we've got quality reports. As a former lecturer, that's what he's assisting the institution to oversee, the training, that institution which is linking with the judge, it's Mr. McCourt Mason. They are responsible for training on procurement law, and they are training on the quality assurance of our reports, implementing the constitution, all legal frameworks, how our reports are drafted. So he's not being trained.
I can assist you by saying there are so many professors and other people who can volunteer their services. We want your office to provide service to the public, to this parliament, and not to be running workshops. There are even law graduates who can provide that. But I'll leave that for another day. Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Horn. And you haven't answered the question, when was the person appointed as special advisor? You haven't answered that question. So I'll first take the follow-ups. Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Butelezi, Honorable Horn, and then the outstanding question.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you once more, Public Protector. Public Protector, I still maintain that, sorry, Chair, I've got a bottle of flu, as I've told you. I still maintain that there is instability at your institution. You have just mentioned that you have 323 warm bodies, isn't it? Yes. And then 190 is core staff, investigating staff. And then you said there are several resignations of staff members, and 5 senior investigators have also resigned, and 1 admin manager. And in a very important constitutional institution like yours, there are 2 critical positions, that of CEO and SFO, CFO, Chief Executive Officer and Chief Financial Officer, CFO. All those positions, presently, there are people acting. So are you not calling that, do you call that stability? I don't think so. And again, I ask a question on which items can you compromise or you can't live with. You only made mention of 2, the goods and services. I can't recall another one. So it means those are the very, very important, because you only said make mention of only these 2. Because I said, even if national treasury, due to fiscal constraint, is able to give something, I don't think they can give 870 million as requested. You must be aware that the justice cluster alone, there is a decrease of 2 billion rand. That's why I asked you, in terms of that slide which was provided here, which items really you can't live with? So you only made mention of goods and services. I can't recall another one. Yeah. I only recall goods and services, but you made mention of two. So it means others you can, even if they are not there, you can compromise, so to say. And another thing, what I would like to ask is that one of your spokesperson, your former spokesperson, where she is now within the institution, is she still enjoying the same benefits she used to enjoy while she was still the spokesperson of the institution or so? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the Protector and the team and my colleagues. I just have one question just for clarity, if the Public Protector can help me to be kind of very simple for me to understand. Regarding the issue of her deputy, if, say, tomorrow she is not in the office for some reasons, can the deputy be able to do what you are doing on a daily basis? That's my first question, because I understand that you have delegated some duties to him to do, but as a committee, as the chairperson was saying, that the person is a leader. He shouldn't be like sitting on a daily basis, training people and doing all that. If you are not there today, can the person be able to do what you do? And how can you describe the relationship between yourself and your deputy? The last question was regarding the issue of Estina. When we look at the court ruling in 2011, where they put it clear that you are not on the receipt to investigate what has been placed before yourself, and also my colleague here mentioned the same when he was commenting, and this is a question that Osho also was raised in our previous meeting. And today we've undertaken to open a file so that you can look into the involvement of politicians in the matter. What made the Public Protector not to see it important to open that file then, yet there is a provision which actually capacitate you to look not only those matters that are brought before you? Because from where I sit and listening at the response that we received in the previous meeting, I felt some sense of reluctance from your office to look into the involvement of politicians, and to give undertaking which we are very happy for. But what made your office not to consider opening this file then? Thank you.
Honorable Horn. Yeah, thanks, Chair. My question relates to, I think, an issue that must be raised now, given some of the answers the Public Protector has given during the course of this very meeting, and that goes to the involvement of the State Security Agency in the operation of her office. So we have it here that there was a secondment from the State Security Agency when there was when she was in need of a CFO. Then we have it that the security manager has not left, but he's busy being trained at the State Security Agency. Then there's the security system, which, although it seems to be an off-the-shelf type of system, there's a possibility that the State Security Agency will come and operate this. And then in the background we have what is called vetting by the State Security Agency of candidates for senior positions. Now, first of all, in respect of vetting, I think we need a clear answer. Even when we interviewed, or the ad hoc committee interviewed candidates for the position of Public Protector, The final advice we received as Parliament in respect of the candidature of the Deputy Public Protector who applied was that there's no clarity that even the public protector, him or herself, is in need of full-blown security clearance. So, as a matter of fact, I would state that the type of vetting we're talking about here is vetting for, first of all, supply chain management purposes, to prevent people who's been found guilty of corruption-related matters elsewhere in government from being reappointed, and then secondly, a broadly speaking background check, but not full-blown security clearance. But what I'm getting to, Chair, is that I think we must now, as Parliament and as this committee, start to get worried whether the over-involvement of the State Security Agency in the operations of the Office of the Public Protector is not potentially impacting on the ability of the office to perform its functions in an impartial manner, subject only to the law. Independence must be eroded in some way if another arm of government and the state is involved to this extent in the office. It must be questioned why every time there's some assistance needed, why this office goes to the State Security Agency. Why, when there was a CFO needed, for example, was Treasury not approached? Why in none of these instances was the, if I can call it that way, mother department, the Department of Justice, not been approached? I mean, if we talk about the possibility that the SSA will run the security system at the offices, and the way I understand it, it's to an extent possibly even integrated with a case management system, it must be questioned. That's not the role and the function of the State Security Agency. The State Security Agency, even though there's security in the name, deals with the protection of our constitutional order. By its very nature, it's intercepting information and, well, to put it bluntly, spying on people. So there's just no rational basis on which it can be said that the State Security Agency can double up as a service provider to other public entities. And I want to comment on that, but I also want to say that I think, given all of this information, this is now the point where this committee must start asking, is this office still the independent, impartial office supporting democracy it's supposed to be? Thank you, Chair.
I'm not tired of Honorable Horn, but I'm tired of this question on state security. I think you must come clean on your relationship with the state security officer. Do you have a relationship with the department? Why the over-reliance on that department? Are you working for them? Have you been working for them? What's the situation? Because this matter keeps on coming and coming, and it's not good for your integrity and the integrity of your office. I want this to be the last time that this question has to be put to you, and be transparent. Tell us what is the situation, why the over-reliance.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. The Honorable Mutapu, on the issue of stability, I would guarantee you and ensure you that there's stability in the institution, because the institution is performing according to the mandate of the institution. I mean, if we're coming here and we're saying we couldn't finalize out of the 16,000 applications we received, more than 10,000 of those applications. For the financial year 2017-18, we didn't issue 34 reports. Then that will be a challenge that the institution is trying by all its best to make sure that whatever backlog matters are there are dealt with speedily, so that we are also not accused of violating the Constitution on the issues of undue delay. On the issue of the what I can compromise, Chairperson, I indicated that The 870 million, the issues, all issues covered in the 870 million, especially on the structure, we can compromise, operate with the structure we are having. On the issue of the realignment of the salaries of personal staff, because that's one issue. I dealt with the occupational dispensation on the complaints of the executive managers, senior managers, and senior investigators as far as upgrading them to the level compared to the others in the justice department or legally qualified. So currently we only have the administrative staff where there was a job evaluation conducted. Some of them were upgraded, but some were not upgraded. That amounts to 1.7 million. That one is an amount which we would definitely need because it has an impact as well on the morale, staff morale of the institution. On the case management system, we won't be able to compromise because that is a tool which will help the institution to be able to function properly. On issues of litigation costs, it's a question of not opposing any matter as an institution, even if it has an impact on the mandate of the Public Protector as far as the Constitution is concerned. Security improvement, it means we'll have to also park them because we can't have all offices with warm bodies and with integrated security like your scanners and all those. Unfortunately, again, we will have to put very minimal. We can cut and make sure that this amount is reduced. Video conferencing, we can't also, this will also assist because instead of having all the senior managers, the provincial reps, coming to head office every quarter for our meetings, then we can have video conferencing to save on traveling costs and S&T. And then on integrated telephone system, this one is very critical because we can't compromise on, we would need to have this so that when complainants are calling, we are always available to respond. Subject matter experts, we can also compromise and keep it or hold it in abeyance and not have that one.
And on record, as having said, and we have not said, don't oppose matters, we are saying there must be constructive engagement in the spirit of supporting democracy. So please, we're not interfering with your work. We don't want to interfere with your work. We don't want to dictate as to how you should do your work.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that's one issue I indicated that I'm in, as a Public Protector, I'm here to support constitutional democracy, and I'll try by all means to make sure that before the report is issued, the institutions concerned, they are agreeing to the remedial actions. Again, the increase in the litigation, Chairperson, I must indicate, is because of the binding nature of our remedial action because the spike started since 2016. The spokesperson's terms and conditions are still the same. She's still within the communications section. And everything is as is, Honorable Mutapa. Honorable Mkize, the DPP originally was, Buthelezi, was delegated, when I arrived, was delegated the service delivery complaints, especially where there are issues relating to alternative dispute resolution. He was helping in all those meetings to facilitate that. That one, I delegated it to the executive managers because they can also do that. And then he was not delegated to do all the complex matters. even before I arrived. And then he was only delegated those relating to the service delivery. And then because of the challenges we had with the quality of our reports, when we engage in think tanks, because we both sit in think tanks, then there was a need that we develop a new template of the report and then the quality of the cases, because you find that the matters were delaying, even not because of lack of cooperation by institution, but investigators are not trained in report writing and quality reports. Therefore, there was that need that let's train our investigators to be at the level where they can write their own reports, like, you know, writing the report which will stand the court's scrutiny. Hence, that process of having that project to deal with it. Again, it's a question of making sure that there is proper reports which are issued by the institution, and there's nothing more. Which, and the DPP is not administrative like myself, because there's executive managers who can do that. He's at the level where he's chairing those ADR, where then the executive manager must go and draft the reports and stuff like that. But now it's a question of overseeing the training by the service provider on procurement law and the quality assurance who's responsible, but as a lawyer also, to clarify legal issues to our senior investigators as and when they ask them. So that's the issue. So if I'm not there as the public protector, or I'm not reachable, the DPP can only act as far as the delegated matter. So I can still delegate, okay, if there's issues like this, because even other meetings, and FISD, he goes and on my behalf comes back and bring a report and how we can. So those are the operations which we have. I don't know what information the portfolio committee is having. We'll bring the DPP again as part of not saving costs. He'll also come and be responsible for those issues. So I think it will help for me to understand what are the issues which are there. So the relationship between myself and DPP is a very cordial relationship, unless if he was here to ask him also, and we communicate and he goes on interviews, TV, and engage me, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's something, you know, you need to bring to my attention, we can engage with DPP. The issue of Friday, I've indicated the complaint was very clear. It was, I've indicated the last time what was investigated. The report was ready when I came already in 2015. The report was there. So when I joined, I discovered that this is a pending matter. And again, I discovered, because when I visited Free State, when I was introducing myself, it was raised there that there's this pending matter. And then I requested the Free State office, what's happening, what documentation, the report was there. Then I took it with the issuance of the Section 7-9. But then, as I've indicated now, we'll have to relook into especially the politicians. But I think the other issue which you were concerned about as a portfolio committee was the issue of the beneficiaries. So we'll look into the issue of the beneficiaries and especially the impact to them.
That happened. What could be the time frames?
Chairperson, remember.
Because you see, we say we don't want the integrity of this government of Nelson Mandela to be called into question.
The time frame, Chairperson, because now this is an additional work to the current investigators who are there. Let me give you an answer, because the file will be opened and it will be allocated to an investigator, and then can we give the chairperson an indication end of April, how long will that take? Okay. the involvement of SSA, Honorable Horn. SSA is a constitutional institution which is provided for in the institution, in the constitution. It's one institution which is there to assist the country in issues relating to the security of the country. So the involvement of SSA is working for SSA for 3 months. I knew that there is additional capacity which can be availed. The Public Protector Act allows me to do that. I wrote to National Treasury requesting the CFO. I have even proof. The minister, they ended up responding to say they don't have the capacity to assist. In fact, the DG is the one who signed that. So that process is not only approaching SSA for the CFO, the Treasury was the first one to be approached. And then it was SSA, again, based on the issue of knowing that there might be additional capacity which can be utilized in that particular institution. The security manager, I mean, it's what he's doing, he needs to implement the MIS, what we call Management of Information Security Systems. Therefore, that institution is their core mandate to do that, to make sure that all systems which are utilized in government are secured, and as well being trained on what information is critical as an institution, whether do we need to classify our information or we don't need to classify the information. That's the training this person is supposed to be attending. On the issue of the system, again, is the issue of their available capacity, in the sense that they are not a service delivery related institution. SSA, can you avail your specialists, because they do have system analysts. CETA, they are the people who will be charging you. If, I mean, you know, they depend also on the public or private companies to be able to deliver services. If you need anything from CETA, I mean, even currently, they are responsible for managing our Microsoft true-up contract. And they, Microsoft charged us so much money, $3 million. CETA came back and analyzed the whole, and they said, no, there's an additional amount you are owing us. So this institution won't be charging us. And it's a question of making sure that whatever institution which can assist, justice, we are engaging with them on the issue of using the courts, and they are very cooperating as a way of those institutions supporting the public protector on the issue of the footprint. The vetting, the supply chain, your financial managers, when we procure whatever official, especially from senior manager from the institution, even the very same senior investigators, Honorable Horn and Honorable Members, need to have that security clearance, because we are let's say we are investigating you. Now we've got very sensitive information, which is personal. Let's now forget about who we're investigating, but bring it home to yourself, where we have your ID, where we have your bank account, your balances, what you are paying, what you are not paying. That person who is an investigator needs to have that credibility and be able to know that this information I cannot just avail willy-nilly. So hence, the integrity of our officials need to have that. Myself as the public protector, I need to have that integrity of knowing that if I investigate any minister, the president, any other state-owned entity, I can keep that particular information, because currently there's a lot of information which, when you meet with the complainants, the kind of evidence which we receive, it's something which you need a person who's credible, who will keep that information until the report is drafted, and that information, when it's taken on review. Hence, we have to avail all the records, but from our side, we make sure that we keep the integrity of the institution, the issues of not leaking information about the character and the people.
So involvement in SSA, Chairperson, I work for SSA. I've been saying the very same thing when I was accused by the DA that I'm a spy. When I was working for Home Affairs since 2005 until July 2016, I was working for Home Affairs. Again, that matter is before court, where I was saying to DA, let them withdraw those allegations if there's no contrary, because from my side, I worked for only 3 months, and I'm still repeating, Chairperson, that I'm not working for SSA. SSA is there as an institution, a constitutional department, which is provided for. Why not use them if they've got the resources to deliver the services? That's all what I can do. If justice has been approached now, we said they met with the CFO. Can you assist with the overdraft or the deficit? They availed the 15 million. It's not a question that I only work with state security in this particular instance, but all departments which are available to assist the public protector are there. So SSA, justice, and any other person, they are not involved in the investigation, because the core, which is investigations, independence, impartiality, is only based on the fact that if it comes that I need to investigate any other person, the Minister of SSA or the DG of SSA, the Minister of Justice, that will be done in terms of the law. So I think that's my submission, Chairperson.
I do not want to be accused of parliamentary overreach, and there's no intention on our part to do that. But would it be unfair if we suggest that the apparent lack of capacity in your office suggests that you should, with immediate effect, recall the Deputy Public Protector to report to your office on Monday to help you to do the work and not to be a training officer? Because there are many professors who can volunteer to be training officers. I don't think that a Deputy Public Protector should become a training officer. He should come and reinforce you, because we also don't want the leaders of our government to live under a cloud because the necessary investigations are not done, and we have to see the hawks surrounding offices of government, special forfeiture units surrounding government. That's not good for the integrity of our government. So we want your office to be preemptive, to be proactive, so that this government that has been elected by the people, and the people have confidence in this government, the people must continue to have confidence in this government of Masisulu and Nelson Mandela. I would advise that you recall the DPP from training to come to the office to do his work. We don't need DPPs who become professors of procurement and things like that. And also, please, the date of appointment of special advisor. What is this special advisor on? Maybe they're advising on you on work that your deputy should be advising you on supporting you. When are you going to appoint that special advisor?
The special advisor started on the 1st of April. The DPP, the work they are doing, it's at the level which cannot be something which the DPP... And the DPP is not a training officer, Chairperson. The DPP is also in the office overseeing the work. But I guess...
Oversight is our responsibility. We want him to provide leadership to the institution and help you, because you are saying there is a problem of capacity.
Okay.
we have raised all the questions. Honourable members, can we agree that we have raised all the concerns and we don't want to be accused of parliamentary overreach because we want the institution to function well, and make sure that where Mercy Sulu is lying, she should be happy that a government is actually delivering to the people of this country. Can we leave it there? Public Protector, thank you very much for your appearance. I think you know where the concerns are, but we want these concerns to be addressed like yesterday. And when you respond, there may be things that you want to respond in writing. We also want you to give us time frames of what you are going to do by when, so that we are also able to account to the people of this country, because they expect us to do our work as well. Thank you very much. You are well excused.
What time was it?
That was just, I think that was, so I sent him one message because then the meeting was going to continue throughout the day, but then...
Well, you can speak, you have the right to speak. Honorable Hans, they are speaking.
No, I was just asking my colleagues what happened to the budget that budget presentation that we gave. I thought maybe there was a bit of sort of a wrapping up and the kind of advice that we were expecting the chair to address, but it's okay. But I guess it will come.
We heard you. The committee will deliberate.
Yeah,
we know what your requests are, and so on. But you see, we cannot talk about increase or decrease of a budget when we are not yet assured that there is an institution that is viable. So that's why we focus on the institutional matters. But we are able to deliberate on the matters. We're going to deliberate on these matters on our own, and so don't worry.
Okay, that's what I wanted, because it was not on record, Chairperson.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
What was interesting is the fact that I was actually on Twitter, and this whole meeting is trending on number one on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a bit of a dog show when the public protector comes to Parliament.